cooler than Math Club and almost as cool as Chess Club. The Fan Club. Log on to Sportsnet590.ca.
Blocked there by McClement. And comes back to Spezza. Spezza with a cross-ice pass far side for Hemsky. Hemsky working in. Back to Carlson. Carlson to Spezza. Shot! Scores!
That's all she wrote. One and only one goal tonight. The Ottawa Senators 1-0 winners over the Toronto Maple Leafs. The final regular season game for the Leafs and no playoff action as we've known for about the last week. And of course, we welcome all our Blue Jay listeners over to a little bit of hockey talk. Leafs Nation postgame brought to you by your GTA Acura dealers. Gord Stellick, Rick Natras with you on Sportsnet 590, The Fan. And Rick, we're going to get a chance to chat a lot about tonight's game. We want to grab Lance Hornby. I've been waiting in Ottawa. And boy, Lance, there were all kinds of different scripts for this final game. We thought it could be a playoff preview for both teams or matter to one team and not the other. Instead, it was a game that you kind of went out with a whimper rather than a bang, and it was that kind of game.
Well, you know what? A little bit of everything in the game, I guess, for the fans' sake. And again, a lot of people from Toronto managed to come down and made themselves heard. That was a pretty competitive game. And if that was James Reimer's last game as a Leaf, good for him because he played quite well, deserved a game star. But admittedly, if he put together more of those games earlier on, they and he wouldn't be in their predicament.
Yeah, we were just talking, Gordon and I, even if they would have won just over a quarter of their games, they would have been in the playoffs. And that's the scary part.
Quarter of the games in the slump.
In the slump, yeah. I'm sorry. Yeah, in the slump. And you know, and you look at Reimer, which is great, you know, the focus. Why tonight? And I don't want to crap all over him, but why tonight and why not when they needed it? That's my concern. You know, he was more controlled. He was a lot of things. And I'm not blaming him. But again, you know, it's another thing. Like I heard a comment, you got to flush it. Well, you know what I'd like to do is flush a few heads down the toilet because the fact is they didn't get it and they weren't willing to do it. And that's the biggest issue I have.
Well, to your first point, Rick, yeah. I guess the location was perfect for Reimer. He has outstanding
yes.
games. Here in the Canadian Tire Center, or the Palladium, or the Corral Center, whatever it's been called, over the time that he's been with the Maple Leafs, certainly it's a building.
9-2-1
9-2-1 and an off the wall save percentage as well. But you know, your point's a good one. Why now and not maybe in that Detroit game where things went south, or as many Leafs were saying that the loss against Winnipeg when it looked like things were finally going to go their way, they were getting help on the out-of-town scoreboard, that's when everything had a chance to turn, and they didn't do it.
Yeah. What's the sense you got? Well, we're going to talk a lot about game number 83, which you thought would be a playoff game, but Randy Carlyle, it's interesting now that he seems to be of the mind. The unthinkable was months ago, weeks ago, about him being among the guys getting fired. You're around him day by day. It seems like he's accepted that kind of fate if that's the way it's going to be.
He did look kind of, gaunt or glassy-eyed or whatever in the last couple of press conferences. But at tonight, he was, back to the old Carlyle. I think the fact the team didn't lose 7-0 and go out in a torrent of booze was probably in his favor. But it will be interesting to see what Brendan Shanahan's plan is once he gets in there. It may be a quick execution. It may be that we're all maybe looking too closely and expecting a huge massacre on Monday. That maybe they'll take a good look at things, get to know Carlyle a little bit before there's changes there, and maybe the changes come in areas where we don't expect them. But certainly the easiest thing to do, obviously, is get rid of the coach because there's a lot of there's a lot of players on the Leafs that need addressing down as well, and certainly maybe need to move or have or not be re-signed. But you can't do all that, as you know, Gordy, being in that position. You're not, you can't do everything you want to do, and one person has to pay the price. Unfortunately, that may be Carlyle.
Yeah, and I've talked about, there's a few things, I'd like to, get an understanding on why Carlyle, didn't try to build a fourth line, why, overplayed, and I think a lot of that contributed to the lack of production or the lack of level, the inability to play at a high level for some of the key guys down the stretch here. So, he's got to take some responsibility, but that's it. But again, I think Ken Hitchcock said it the best. If you're the coaches are working the hardest on your team in March, you're in trouble. And the problem with this lineup, and you've been around, Lance, is you go back to 08-09, they're a minus hockey team in regards to goals for or goals against, and they are, again, one of the factors is their inability to commit to playing a system long enough to show that it's effective, and the second one is the inability to kill penalties and block shots on a consistent basis and get pucks out. So,
A lot of those things you mentioned are things they did in short spurts in the 48-game season, and you know you saw them build a little bit on their on the confidence of that. And you touched upon Colton Orr. Well, last year when he used Orr a little more, and then, you know, it exchange of course they had that tough identity, and there was more of a role for Colton. But your point is a good one. I mean, this team needs a workable fourth line, and right now they don't have it. Where they get it, I don't know. I mean, there's probably some free agents out there, or you know, it'd be interesting to see how far the Marlies go, and if history repeats itself, when they went to the Calder Cup final, a lot of players were able to make the jump next year. But there were, you know, good things. Obviously, I thought Morgan Riley showed why he was the best rookie this year, and even though it was for one game, I was impressed with Petter Granberg tonight. A really good game.
Now, on the other side, we touched a little bit about the coaching situation. But in general, in the big picture, Brendan Shanahan, and you've been around for a long time, and I find it interesting that Brendan Shanahan, who was not even near the picture a number of days ago, not that many days ago, now is the face and the hope for the future for the average Toronto Maple Leaf fan. And he's not going to be on the ice. It's unclear what he's going to do. We'll find that out more Monday. But what do you make of this hiring?
Well, certainly it's in keeping in line with what Tim Lewecki wanted. I had an interesting conversation with him 2 or 3 weeks ago. He was going on about changing the culture in Toronto, and was dropping hints then. Like he put everything behind the team. Don't get me wrong. He wasn't writing off the season. And as a matter of fact, he predicted the Leafs are going to finish with a flurry. But you know what he did say? If we quit, we look really bad down the stretch, then certainly we'll know we have a lot of work to do. And he sees Shanahan, obviously, as a player and an executive and somebody who can, you know, have an impact. And you guys have mentioned it. He's not exactly the most experienced person in this line of work, but sometimes change is a good thing. I think he's seen a lot, from where he is in his various jobs on the ice and off. And I think, he may not be the guy who wields the axe, but he may be the one they go to at the end to make a decision on a player. He may have some instincts in that area that are going to come in handy.
He's the guy that sharpens it, right? You know what I mean? Make it a clean cut and get somebody else to do it. No, and I don't think it's a bad thing for him to be here. And I think, you know, I understand why him and Lewicki likes to have, you know, a big name, and Shanahan's a big name, and he's won cups, and he's over 2,000 minutes and 600 goals. And God, wouldn't you like one or two or three of those guys on the team? My biggest concern is if Randy couldn't do it, Ron Wilson couldn't do it, who's gonna instill the mentality? There's a way to play, and as much as we'd like to give you the opportunity to run and gun, the last 6 years should have proven to many of these guys, and we're talking about the core guys, that style is not conducive to being a winner on a consistent basis. And this is the puzzling part. There was restrictions with many other teams. I think there was 11 teams that really couldn't budge at the beginning of the year off the salary cap in regards to the hindrance of trying to make some changes, even tweaking the lineups. And I think that got Toronto in a position where they certainly couldn't bring in maybe a fourth line because of the salary structure, as we all know, right? Got to make an extra here and there. But is that still going to be available to them on that third and fourth line? Because I feel if you can, not only their defense need to be improved, but if you get that third and fourth line, can be those grinders like you watch in L.A., you watch in Anaheim, you watch in Phoenix, you watch in maybe Phoenix isn't, they lost six in a row, but you know, those type of guys, that will open up ice for your number, you know, one line and number two line. And I'm not sure that number two line is a true number two line the way they perform this year as well.
Well, you raised a number of points about how the fourth may shake out next year. You know, I didn't think a player like Troy Bodie, for example, was someone I would overlook for next year. He, you know, he seems to be a perfect fourth line guy, kind of a maybe can't fight like Colton Lower, but certainly has more speed, more puck sense. If Jay McClemon stays, I believe he's an unrestricted free agent.
Yes, he is. Yeah.
You know, that's 2/3 of a decent fourth line there. And moving up, I certainly agree with you that there wasn't a lot to like of the second line. But you know, where we all know what happened to Clarkson, the Mason Raymond's disappearance in the second half was also noteworthy. But if you give, as they have no choice but to do, give Clarkson a do-over for next season, hope that Boland comes back and anchors the third line, if indeed they're going to spend the money to re-sign him. I think the players are there, but the question is the coach there? And is it, you know, was this year just an aberration for a couple of those guys, as well as the injury to Boland? Or, you know, is there going to have to be this major change of culture, as Lowecki likes to say?
Well, we'll find out. We thought Monday we'd all be at MasterCard Center getting set like last year for the Toronto-Boston playoff, for a playoff against somebody like that. Instead, 11 a.m. press conference live here on Sportsnet 590, The Fan, and covered on Sportsnet as well. And, of course, you'll be there as well. Lance, always appreciate you joining us.
Yes,
thanks,
Lance,
very much.
Thank you.
Okay. Thanks, guys, for having me on this year.
Yeah.
Lance Hornby, and he's covered the National Hockey League and the Toronto Maple Leafs a lot of years for the Toronto Sun.
Yeah, and, you know, again, and he's another guy you have to wonder, but, again, the willingness to be able to adapt your game to the opposition and be able to maintain a system, it seems to elude, you know, this team. It has eluded them, no matter who's been behind the bench. So I really believe I liked Carlisle, but is it now, after two coaches, one gave him the reins, the other one tried to bring in the reins, and we still see the same, you know, end result? That concerns me.
Well, let's hear from, as we always do, the Toronto Maple Leaf head coach, Randy Carlisle, after tonight's 1-0 loss to the Ottawa Senators.
A frustrating season, Randy?
Well, you know, it's 1-0 hockey game. You know, there's obviously tonight was kind of a game where it didn't seem like it was both teams didn't want it to be a no-hitter for a while, and then, you know, they score a power play goal, and our power play frustrated us. In the hockey game, we couldn't get anything going on it, and I guess that's probably the way this season has went, from a standpoint of we worked hard in parts of the season to give ourselves a chance, and then we fell far short of our goal, that's for sure.
The Granberg group, like, he looked confident out there, looked like
a big guy that you know, said that he's a puck mover and he's a big man that plays physical, and you know, that's what these games at times they have to be for young players. And that's the, you know, encouraging thing that he came in and was able to handle the situation. And the other thing was James Reimer's play. You know, he stood tall in the nets for us. You know, he likes this building.
Given the way things have unfolded the last month, is there any relief that comes with sort of the end of this and a chance to take a break and refresh?
Well, there's going to be a lot of I guess, thoughts and a lot of meetings taking place here over the next little while. So I don't think it's a break. It won't be a break for coaches. I know that players, it's a different story, but with coaching staffs and management, and we have an inventory that we have to go over and do an analysis of where we went and why we went and how we went, and do some things and that we have to look into what we did too.
Cody Franzen was saying it's going to be tough. This is going to stick with him for a bit. Do you feel the same way, where the way this season ended?
Well, it's terribly disappointing and emotional. It's almost like you get in a state of depression because it's such a negative in your life. It's simple as that. We're embarrassed about the way things unraveled for our hockey club.
Brad asked you, what kills worse, Game 7 last year or this?
Well, I think this has been extended over a period of time that's really dragged a lot of people and a lot of emotions with it, where the Game 7 was over in a period, and it still hurt. They're both equally cutting, but again, you know, I think this has been drawn out over weeks here, and the last three games, we just didn't have enough energy and didn't have enough execution to play the game that was required to get ourselves a win. Simple as that.
What happened with your big line down the stretch? A little fatigue post-Olympics?
I don't know. I think, you know, usually I look at it at the power play. That's the segment when you look at where our power play went over the last month. It's pretty shocking. And, you know, that really is, and that goes hand in hand a lot of times with your most skilled guys because they get the opportunity to play on that. So that's what you'd have to look to.
Do you think this finish suggests that a lot needs to change for this team to be better, or was it just...
As I said, it's going to take some time to decipher everything that's gone on, and again, there will be a lot of questions and a lot of internal banter going back and forth on what we feel and what we needed to do and what we should have done and what they could have done, and all of those things. It's going to take some time to get through.
Do you look back and think maybe there's something you could have done differently?
There's always going to be things I could have done differently, for sure. You know, there's nobody here that is absolving themselves of any responsibility.
Well, Randy Carlyle, maybe his last post-game press conference as a member of the Toronto Maple Leafs or meeting the media. And one comment really struck you, Rick Natras, as he got a lot of empathy for him, but.
Yeah, and I do. But you know, that the power play, I'm looking at, you know, a lot of the points for Phil came on, you know, 5-on-5, I believe 60 of his close to 80 points. I know the 5-on-5, I wasn't happy, you know, it worked early, but once they took away Phil on the side and the other two guys couldn't hit the net, you know, be it Franson or Fanoff, I found that power play would easy to defend if it was me. And I used to kill a lot of penalties, as you know, Gord. I just felt that the non-willingness or the inability to get somebody to stay high so the odd man rush situation would not be as evident as it was every game, every period, every shift almost. And we saw it again tonight. And, you know, the unwillingness to support guys, and that mentality of what, you know, it's always good to, you know, great to think if it's, you know, if this happens here, if I stay here, I can have an open net and a breakaway. Well, whatever happened to the attitude of what happens if that bounces over his stick or he doesn't keep the puck in, and am I in a good spot to defend him? And I thought it was more the first than the latter. And so that was a little concerning for me and Randy. I know he doesn't want to get too into it, but to say that the power play was one of the issues, sure, it was one of the issues, but at the end of the day, if you would have played a better 5-on-5 all around and killed penalties, then your power play wouldn't have needed to be so effective. So, again, I know I'm nitpicking here, but the frustration is there, the inability to play at a higher level and commit your body and your soul to a system that and stick with it even when it wasn't working in your favor was my biggest issue with the Toronto Maple Leafs. So, yeah, you know, Gordon, you know, I think the Leafs right now have to look at, you know, a lot of different things. That's what Shanahan's doing. But, again, the core guys, I think, were overplayed. The secondary guys that we talk about that are being paid very well, good for them. But when you don't produce, then you got to, instead of flushing it, look in the mirror. Because I'm tired of hearing that word flush it. Because if it would have kept them up a few more nights, rolling around wondering if they had a job or a career with the Toronto Maple Leafs, we wouldn't be talking about the end of the year right now.
Well, we'll get a chance to talk more of, unfortunately, what is the end of the year, and we'll find out what happens, of course, on Monday. Brendan Shanahan, of course, Tim Leiwicki had mentioned a while ago about having a formal presser, which we thought was going to be Tim Leiwicki, and which was kind of unusual. He was said scheduling it that way, but that will be on Monday as well. Later on, we'll hear from Chris Johnston from Sportsnet and Sportsnet.ca. Also, we'll check in with our man David Alter as well and talk about the season that was. The season, as Randy Carlyle said, that, he wasn't there. The 18-wheeler 2 years ago is why he became the head coach, and that kind of remedied that. Last year, the quick one, kind of like ripping a bandage off, all happened in one period. And then, of course...
The no-grind season, because this is, you had to grind to win this year, and they didn't.
And this one was a little bit longer and probably more torturous that way.
Yeah.
We'll come back with more Leafs Nation postgame, brought to you by your GTA Acura dealers. Gord Stelic, Rick Natras with you on Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
Like free sports tickets, trips, and memorabilia so you can trick your friends, colleagues, and mistresses into thinking that you're some sort of high roller? Hey, join the club.
Welcome to the club.
The Fan Club. Log on to sportsnet590.ca.
Welcome back, Leafs Nation postgame. Gord Stellick, Rick Natras with you, brought to you by your GTA Acura dealers on Sportsnet 590. The Fan, the final Leaf regular season game, a 1-0 loss to the Ottawa Senators. Our man Chris Johnston from Sportsnet, sportsnet.ca, joining us. And Chris, I mean, let's move on to game number 83. Monday, the press conference with Brendan Shanahan. You broke the story about Dave Nonis coming back, that he'll be firm next year. Randy Carlyle looks like a guy, I think, that has accepted his fate. I mean, what do you make of a coach who was probably about as unfireable as anybody was up till a month ago?
Well, yeah, I mean, it's clear that if he hasn't accepted his fate, as, you know, acknowledging that he's likely to lose his job, I think that he's sort of at peace with whatever happens, because, you know, this has been a tough go for him. And you know, whatever you think of Randy Carlyle as a coach, I mean, I think he was trying everything he could to get this team going, and he was unable to do that. And he clearly, you know, feels the weight of that. And it's been a very tough month for everyone. But I think he especially kind of, you know, is aware, being a veteran hockey man, that, you know, these opportunities don't come around for everyone, that the change is going to come, and was trying to get this group back on track and unable to do so. And now, essentially, we wait to hear, you know, what his fate will be.
Yeah, Chris, and we've talked in length about why that is. Why did this team feel that they were being told? And again, we're talking about a guy coming in, Shan, which is, you know, I don't think it can hurt. I mean, it's Stanley Cup champion, Hall of Famer, 600 goals, 2,000 minutes, penalty minutes, all these things that, you know, is a typical player that the Leafs would love to have on, you know, a couple of their lines, never mind just one. But we already had a Stanley Cup champion in Randy Carlyle, a guy that, you know, knew how to get, you know, guys supposedly to play the right way. We're seeing a team that there's been carryover from the last regime in regards to, you know, the Ron Wilson and guys that are still playing the same way. They felt they were doing all the right talking, going 10-4 at the beginning of the year, 10-5, whatever it was, and scoring 5 goals a game, but giving up all those chances. The only thing that changed the last 20 games or the last 15 is they weren't scoring 5 goals, but they were still giving up all the chances. So this is, to me, is very concerning in regards to, can anybody flip these core guys to make them understand that you can't win hockey games or you can't win a championship playing loosey-goosey?
Well, I mean, I don't think anyone can even say that it won't hurt bringing in Brendan Shanahan. I think that the biggest question hanging over, you know, this organization entirely right now is, how is this going to work? How is the power structure going to go? You know, what role does everyone play? Is everyone buying in? You know, I think that this, you know, has the potential to go terribly. You know, it's hard to conclude anything else, you know, given, you know, what happens sometimes with front offices. We saw in Buffalo, Pat LaFontaine come back to much, you know, celebration, and then he was gone within a month or two, you know, shortly after general manager Tim Murray was hired. So, you know, there's a good chance, or there's at least some chance, that this thing won't work. And I guess that's sort of what we'll be looking to find out on Monday, is how's this group going to be pulled together, who's going to be making the decisions, and then ultimately trying to determine if everyone's on board with the way the power structure shakes down. Because, you know, as of right now, we know that Brendan Shanahan's coming in. We expect, you know, changes, you know, at all levels, be it coaching, personnel, of course, and maybe perhaps even some in the front office. But we don't really have a sense of the new universe just yet. And I think that, you know, for me, that's what's most important, because, you know, somehow this has to, you know, come together as an organization that has a chance to compete for a Stanley Cup at some point. And right now, maybe just the emotion of the way this thing has ended, but they feel a long way away.
Well, and it's, I agree with you. I think everyone, nobody has a problem with Brendan Shanahan, the person. But as far as, yeah, how it could work, there's a lot of ways it can go sideways. You put more cooks in the broth and that. So we'll find out a little bit more. One is, if anybody could help the fellow Mimico native in David Clarkson, and we've chatted, Chris, about this, that, you know, I compare it to Scott Gomez's situation in Montreal, that it's gone so bad that you don't even talk about it because it's almost cruel. It's like, you know, in Ricky Romero with the Toronto Blue Jays, at least pitchers, there's been a history of that a guy loses their ability to get the ball over the plate, and it's something a little bit more tangible that way. I mean,
mechanics. Yeah.
He doesn't even look like an NHLer out there right now. And I mean, I can understand with what he's been through, but just it's like, where's the real guy? This is very, very, not just disappointing, but baffling. And it was one thing when you're going to make the playoffs and see what he can do then, but when you fall short and he continues not to be able to contribute, this is one of the so far one of the worst free agent signings ever.
It is, and, you know, I guess to keep it from ever being considered that in the long run, the Leafs have to find a way to either get him to play in a way that he shows some value for that contract, or perhaps try to move him on somewhere else. Or, you know, this is another question for them to figure out, because, you know, in a salary cap era, you can't afford to have too many mistakes on your roster just because of, you know, the fact that it's not about the money that David Clarkson is being paid. It's that you can't then use that $5.25 million to pay anyone else to play for your team, you know, or you know, it has a doubling effect there, where it's not just that he's getting a lot, it's that he's sort of taking away the potential of what else you can add. So, you know, this is an important question for the Leafs as they're moving forward here. And you know, I'm guessing he'll be back. I would think it would be hard to move that contract at this point. I would think that the Leafs probably want to see what he can do in a full year, one where he doesn't get suspended for the first 10 games. You know, one reason, getting used to a new environment, you know, for the first time, and just try to get something of value for him, because, you know, clearly they didn't get very much of their investment this season.
Yeah, and Chris, and we talk about that, and I, you know, there's no way he could be have a year like he had this year. I believe that. I just think he's got too much character. But that number is still always going to be a shadow over him, the 5.250. So I don't think, you know, I think you brought up a couple months ago or even longer that, you know, when you're seeing guys going to be signing 5 years from now for, you know, the top guy making 12, maybe 13, $14 million, that $5 million for a third line guy isn't going to seem as much, but it's a long way from here to there. So, I mean, he's going to improve, but is he ever going to improve so everybody likes the price tag that it comes with? I'm not sure. The one question I wanted to ask, David, is, Chris, is you've got, you know, we missed an opportunity, unfortunately, with David Bolin probably coming back too early. Didn't get to see him, you know, with his, you know, he had a good audition as a Toronto Maple Leaf, the 16 games, I believe he played, or 20, and, you know, had points and, you know, had 6 goals and, you know, was doing everything both sides of the puck, as far as we remember, because I kind of think he still had some issues in his game early in the season like everybody else. But we didn't get to see Nazem Kadri. We saw him in a tight situation coming down the stretch here. Wasn't able to elevate his game and be that, you know, Helm or Nyquist or whoever you want to, you know, pick on a team that Johansson and Columbus, you know, that one of those guys that, you know, picked the team up and got them over the hump because other guys couldn't. So we lose that opportunity, and who's going to be the $5 million man eventually? And how do you see the Bolin situation, you know, turning itself, and where do you see Nazem Kadri? Even though he did have 50 points, was he the guy that everybody thinks he should be, or he's going to be?
Well, I don't think there's any way that David Bolin is back in Leafs uniform next season. It does not fit at all in the salary cap structure. You know, it's clear he wants a long-term contract at decent money. I mean, even look at the Clarkson thing, plays into this. If Clarkson is getting $5.25 million, I don't think David Bolin wants to be in the same dressing room making less than him based on, you know, even their contributions this year. I think, you know, even though Bolin played significantly fewer games, he would actually beat him in scoring this season. I mean, to me, this just didn't work out. I mean, I understand the deal at the time. I know what the Leafs were trying to do, and he suffered a very strange injury and one that basically wiped him out for the whole year. Even when he came back, he wasn't, you know, the sort of player the Leafs want him to be. And I think now he'll move on, ultimately, as a free agent. You know, as for Nazem Kadri, I just think that the Leafs need a little bit of patience here. You know, I didn't think he was too bad. He wasn't, you're right, a game-breaking player just yet. But I don't think that we've seen enough, or that he's old enough to know that he won't get there. And here's another important part about him. He's still relatively cheap at $2.99 million. And I think that you let him play that season here in Toronto and you keep working with this kid and see if he can go to another level, because I think he will. I'm not sure if it's going to be here or not. And you know, you got to have centers from somewhere. We know they're likely to have Bozak back. You know, I think Kadri's in the mix. You might have a Peter Holland next season knocking on your roster door, but they're going to, you know, likely have to add somewhere to that mix rather than take away.
Okay, so David Bolin, it's interesting about him not coming back. It'd be disappointing for a lot of Leaf fans who want to be frozen in time about the first 16 games of the year. Is it the type of thing, is everything amicable about stuff? Is it strictly the salary cap
business
situation,
yeah,
you have? And do you think, is there going to be a market out there, a big market, given the injury, the severe injury he had?
I do think it's amicable. You know, I don't have a full handle on that situation, but my sense, you know, and being around the team and speaking with David a little bit, I don't think that there's, you know, bad feelings per se here. I just think that they're no longer a fit. There's not the Leafs are not a team that can add a $5 million center, at least in my estimation when I look at the way, you know, their roster's built. They have a lot of players that they have to sign, whether they're restricted free agents like Jake Gardner. And, you know, I think they're likely to let most of their UFAs go. You know, the guys that fall in that category are McClement, Kuhlman.
Yeah.
Those type of guys, I think, are gone. And you know, I just don't see where the Leafs have room for them, and I don't see a fit there anymore. I really don't. And I think there will be teams, you know, because there's a lot of teams that aren't nearly as cap-strapped as the Leafs. The Leafs were either above the cap because of long-term injury provisions or right at it the entire year. It was, you know, we saw the other game there. It kept them from being able to play Petter Granberg in the game in Florida. They were so close to the cap. And this is with 3 days less in the season that they were. So, you know, I just think the Leafs have to be very careful how they manage their cap situation. And I don't see them spending big money on a guy who's injury prone as Bowen, who's coming off a serious injury. I just think that they're going to have to cut ties with this guy.
Yeah, he wants 7 or 8 years at that $5 million. It's another $40 million. And, you know, Chris, if we've talked about the forward so much, and again, if we can get, say, your, you know, Joffrey Lupo to be healthy and be on a consistent, you know, be a consistent playmaker, you know, both ways, get Kadri to do that, then your top six aren't that bad again. Again, but they need to play with a little bit more grit, and we can, I guess we can all agree with that. But the back end. It was really, you know, we got rid of Mark Fraser in regards to, or the Leafs did, because of the fact that he couldn't fit in, bring in a Gleason. He started off really well, didn't, you know, he sort of died off. But that foot speed issue, other than Riley and Gardner, became evident. We saw way too many breakaways. Was that because the support wasn't there, or the lack of the ability to, you know, to maintain a good pace or gap? What is your thoughts on how they can improve that because of the salary cap? And we saw Granberg come in and play okay, but again, it's one game, right? So what are the chances of them solidifying the back end through in-house or trades?
Well, I think this is the area where we're likely to see the most amount of change is on the blue line.
Needs to, yeah.
Yeah, there was a definite feeling among the Leafs, you know, executives, I think that the defense was an issue. I mean, we've talked about it so much, that the team's defensive deficiencies, but I do think that you're going to see a new group back there. You've got, you know, another summer where Cody Franzen is going to be a restricted free agent. And as we remember, he's had a couple tough goals in terms of negotiating new contracts with the Leafs the last two summers prior to this one. You know, Carl Gunnarsson is on a 2-year remaining on his contract, but I think it could be something that could be moved if they chose to go that way. You know, they might even look at trying to trade Dion Phaneuf before his, no trade clause kicks in on July 1st on the new extension that he signed at the Winter Classic. I mean, I think almost everything has to be considered. You know, we've heard Jake Gardner's name and rumors. You know, to me, that's not a move I would make, but, you know, I think it will be one.
Not yet, yeah.
Because of what they might be able to get back. I mean, to me, the only true untouchable on that blue line right now is Morgan Riley, and I think it's just because, you know, he's come in and played a pretty good season for a guy who was a teenager for half of it. And you know, it would just be silly to give up on him at this point. But I think, you know, that we're likely to see a lot of movement among that group. And you know, I honestly don't have the solution for them. I don't think it's an easy one. There's not a lot of obvious free agents. I mean, there's a guy like Matt Niskanen, believe it or not, is likely to be the biggest free agent name on the blue line. And, you know, he's having a good year in Pittsburgh. But he's not the kind of guy that I don't think they would go open the bank for. So they're going to have to get creative.
Chris Johnson joining Gord Stellick, Rick Natras on Leafs Nation postgame, brought to you by your GTA Acura dealers on Sportsnet 590 The Fan. And, you know, I'm always leery about, and I go back to the, quote, old days in the sense when I worked with the Leafs and whoever the coach was, and you went down the end of the game, and when you're winning, you're not going to trade everybody. When you lose, you want to get rid of everybody. It's like the worst time to talk about everything. So I'm trying to keep some perspective that way, Chris. But we bounced this off David Alter earlier, and I mentioned the 24/7 show being dull. And then I mentioned, and Rick's mentioned it before, about a lack of emotion and waste. I mean, it's not the makeup of this Maple Leaf team. It's not Kessel's makeup. Dion Phaneuf plays a pretty stroke close to the vest that way. And I thought that, and you're around them on a pretty well daily basis, I thought that lack of emotion kind of showed in the losing streak, whether it was, you know, a fiery Darcy Tucker type or something like that, that I think that's got to be factored in the mix.
Well, I mean, it's no fun when you're losing either, right? And I think that it did weigh on them. I mean, Randy Carlyle described it as feeling depressed during this last month, just with the way everything snowballed on them, and there was such a toxic environment there. And, you know, for whatever reason, and I don't know exactly what the case was, you know, even being around the team a lot during the locker room, they seemed to have a little bit more spunk and swagger, and seemed like everyone was having a little bit more fun. And I don't know if it was just some of the changes they made, maybe the guys that lost, whether, you know, it's being a Leo Komarov or Mikhail Grabowski or these type of guys. But for whatever reason, they seem to have a lot more fun at the rink last year than they did this year. And maybe, again, part of that is just simply that they were winning a little bit more a year ago. And I do think that when you lose, especially in Toronto, it weighs pretty heavy on pro athletes. But you're right. There wasn't a kind of personality there in the end. Instead, we had a lot of guys looking like a deer in headlights.
Well, yeah, Chris, and again, the anger part, you know, as much as it's brutal when the coach says depressed, because, you know, the challenge of getting out there is you know, to grind, and this lineup, again, we've talked about this, and we're going to beat it to death, I mean, until the season's finally over, I mean, the playoffs, but at the end of the day, Chris, the ability to grind or the willingness to grind and play a different style, or the capabilities of playing a different style was not there, and that's one of the downfalls of the Toronto Maple Leafs. To be a good team, you have to be able to play different ways against different opposition, and Toronto only had one way, and if it was successful, great, but if it wasn't, and too many times it wasn't, certainly down the stretch here, it came back to bite them, and that's the biggest issue.
It is, and, you know, look, to me, that this is the one thing that Brendan Shannon, I know, has been tasked with, is trying to change the culture of the organization. And, you know, as we talked about earlier, I still don't know how it's going to work. I don't know if it's going to work, but I think that part of what they're hoping he can impart is some kind of leadership within the organization. And, you know, I think they view that as the first of many changes that are designed to have these guys a little bit better prepared, you know, obviously playing the sort of system you're talking about that maybe isn't fun. I mean, defense, you know, usually isn't as much fun as scoring a pretty goal, obviously, for anyone, but it's what, you know, wins games, you know, more often than not in the NHL. And if there's anything that I'm going to come away from the season with, it's the thought that the way the Leafs chose to play, you know, proved itself ultimately to be not a way that was going to generate success, even with some, you know, great offensive players who had some great offensive seasons. You know, there was too many shortcomings there to even have a team that can make the playoffs. And I know that for the organization, that this is a massive failure, frankly. They had higher expectations than this, and that's an issue for them.
Chris, it's always been a pleasure. I know we'll be you'll yes. be busy in the postseason regardless, and Monday will be a busy, interesting day. Thanks very much for joining us,
as
always.
Thanks, Chris. Hey, bud.
Hey, thanks for everything. We didn't even talk about James Reimer, who was
in
his eyes tonight in the dressing room, and he's played his last game of the Leafs, he feels. So.
Oh,
so,
and he played good. Well, and he played well, but
I just saw a tweet that said that he didn't want to talk about it now, but what did you, so in chatting, I got to say, if one guy showed some pizzazz and fight in life tonight, and he's been a stand-up guy, so did he give kind of an indication that way, or?
Well, he said that his thought process coming in here, he said he was very emotional and that he wanted in his mind to play one good last memorable game. So, I mean, he was already talking in the past tense about his time with the Leafs, and you know, it's clear he wants to change the scenery, I think, more so than he feels that they want him gone.
Well, last year was, we were debating about whether Dion Phaneuf's wife rolled her eyes at, whatever. That's the fun of the playoffs, whatever. Hey, stand-up guy, that's for sure. So thanks for filling us in with that. We'll talk to you soon, Chris.
Thanks, Chris.
All right, thanks, boys. Cheers.
Chris Johnson joining us from Sportsnet.
Very well.
Sportsnet.ca. And again, you know, it's interesting. We chat with Chris always after all the different games, and so it's been kind of a collage of the way the season's gone for the Maple Leafs in chatting with them. And it's, losing sucks. And that's what you try to keep perspective about. And you've experienced a lot of winning. You've experienced some losing.
Yeah.
And the important thing is to keep perspective in the losing about what is right and what can be fixed and what needs to be addressed. But what can be fixed and what is good.
Well, yeah. And again, the situation with cash down, right, is the biggest factor. You can't buy. We talk about Lewicki and we talk about TFC. I mean, $150 million later, you got a championship, but a hurt one right now, right?
Yeah.
Not a championship. You got a respectable and competitive team, but now you have some injuries to those guys. And then you talk about the Raptors, and again, it was two different scenarios. This is a different animal, and it's the biggest animal in the stable. And, Gord, if we look at the unrestricted, Chris brought up a little bit, but you got Bolin, he's an unrestricted. He's already making 3.375. Kuhlman, 2.8. He's going to be unrestricted. McClement, 1.5. Raymond, $1 million unrestricted. Bodie, which I would sign because I said you could probably get him for $1 million. He's at 600. Ranger for $1 million. You got unrestricted free agents. Gardner at 875. Reimer at 1.8. And you got Franson at $2 million. And you got guys that are, you know, making, that are locked in the long term. Lupo, 5.25 to 0.18. Clarkson to 0.20 at 5.25. Bozak, and I'll take that, 4.2 to 18. Dion, $7 million to 21. JVR, 4.25 to 18. And you got Gleason at $4 million to 0.16. So they got some issues with some big money from guys that some of them were very competitive and competed all year, and some just are wow. So it's a bit tall job, and I'm not sure Shanahan can handle it all on his own. But at the end of the day, it's the culture, Gord, and we know that. You learn from your mistakes and you build on it. And this team hasn't learned that they have to play defense. And that's the biggest
thing.
Well,
you know, just looking at some contracts as well. So Tim Gleason, you made an investment in. Yeah. And you unloaded John Michael Lyles, who you'd made an investment in but didn't fit. And I'd like to see where he can fit here. I mean, you're stuck with him, for want of a better word. But I'd like to see what that stuck means. He got some bite to him, and he was pretty pissed off about the way things went. Yeah. And I liked a lot of things about him. And the other side, though, is, you know, the unrestricted free agents, holy crap. Clarkson, Adam to Jason Blake, who wasn't a total bust, but still wasn't what you hoped for. You know, Mike Komisarek. I mean, the list has gone on and on. I got to get some more of them. I'm drawing a blank right now, but there's just a number of them that, as unrestricted free agents, it just hasn't. I mean, Hal Gill was one, whatever.
You've had,
I mean,
other guys come in, like Gary Roberts, but at the end of, you know, his career, you know, and but he played well, but again, he was near the end of his career.
Yeah, I guess I'm saying since the lockout in 2004, you know, but you're right.
But you
you're
know what I mean, new and
there
guys,
some,
guys like
oh,
that.
Great.
I don't mean, great, but at the end of their careers, you're not getting them young. And this team has been made off of trades, right? And the biggest thing I said, I love...
Jeff Finger, sorry, that was the other one I had thrown.
Okay,
that
was what I was missing. That was Cliff's $14 million over 4 years, never saw a game. I thought Cliff liked me a lot better than him. He never gave me that kind of money. But my point is this, and we'll go back to it, Gordon. They do have some top-fledged guys. There's no mistaking that Bozak had a good year, but he's not a number one centerman. I don't care what anybody says. I don't care. He's not big. He's not strong. He's not that Patrice Bergeron, you know, that kind of guy. You know what I mean? He's not. And that doesn't mean I'm taking anything away from him being a very good NHL centerman, okay? Their back end, again, is not somewhere where they can rely on. They've got two young kids that really their mindset is go forward. We talk about certain individuals that underachieve. We talk about Dion Phaneuf playing, you know, 80% of the season at a very high level. Certainly when he signed the deal, he was in the top five of every category across the NHL for defensemen. So when you look at it, you say, well, how can you give him that money? Well, how could you not? Because he's there and his time was up. But then you look at how he finished. I feel because they played him in wrong situations. I just, as much as I like Randy Carl and I thought, you know, old school, I just didn't like how he managed the team. He managed the fourth line, and he managed that number one line. Too much ice time, not enough responsibility when they were back checking. Too much ice time for the number two unit, not any responsibility for the back check or defensive zone coverage. And they were being rewarded by getting out on the power play. And this is what I said. At least he could have said to Dion or Franson, you know what, the two kids played better tonight. I'm going to put you out there. And again, I hate picking on Randy. I just felt that he worked his rear end off. I know he did. And he tried to get these guys going. But what Ken Hitchcock said the best, if it's March and the coaches are working the hardest on the team, you got problems. And the Leafs had problems.
Well, they certainly had problems the last couple of weeks. Tonight, they end the season with a whimper, not a bang. A 1-0 loss to the Ottawa Senators. The Toronto Maple Leaf season officially over. We'll come back and bring it home, talk about the game, talk about the season. You're listening to Leafs Nation Postgame, brought to you by your GTA Acura dealers. Gord Stellick, Rick Natras with you on Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
Prizes like no other, from a club like no other, The Fan Club. Log on to Sportsnet590.ca.
Welcome back, Leafs Nation Postgame, brought to you by your GTA Acura dealers. Gord Stellick, Rick Natras with you on Sportsnet 590, The Fan. And again, been talking about game number 82 for the Toronto Maple Leafs in the regular season. It turns out it's the final game, period, as we say, the regular season, no playoffs, you name it. And Rick, again, talking the big picture about the game, Randy Carlyle, coaching, potential coaching moves, and what could happen on Monday. And, you know, it's, I don't know, you've been there where you played out the string before with a team. And, again, these are circumstances where it was a Maple Leaf team that, let's face it, it's been a pretty devastating few weeks to be at home and cooled out and then go this way. But, boy, went out with a whimper rather than a bang in a big way, time after time.
Well, you know, we're looking at this week as a big week. You know, we see how it started. A week ago today, Winnipeg, you don't get the effort. You don't get the win. You go down to Tampa, you get shut out there. You know, you go into Florida and get badly outshot by the 29th worst team in the National Hockey League. And then you play against an Ottawa team that should have some pride because it's an Ontario rivalry. Certainly not as big as it used to be, but again, two teams that aren't in the playoffs, so no significance. But again, as you said, Gord Pride, and there was some efforts there. You watch, you know, the Rileys and the Gardners and a couple other guys, but, you know, you have to wait for, what was it, maybe 4 minutes left in the game, and your best shift or best sequence of events came from your fourth line. For the Toronto Maple Leafs, McClement, Bodie, and Kulinen. And that, to me, is just as, you know, again, it's not, it's just frustrating in the sense that, you know, you thought going in, there was a lot of problems, but did you believe those problems would become so evident once they stopped scoring? And that's essentially what it was. They were doing the same things they did for 82 games, Gord, other than score. And we saw what the outcome of that.
You know, it's funny how this has had a little bit more, a little different bite to it. And I'm big on, as I say, about garbage time. I'm huge on that. I don't think stats should be counted. So in some ways, I applaud the Leafs because once it was garbage time, they were terrible. So there's nobody that inflated stats that way. But I can remember other years, they were out before, and people kind of expected it. So you'd see games at Air Canada Centre that fans would get excited about a win, even though they were mathematically eliminated. You remember those games where now it's kind of like even just one Leaf sweater thrown on the ice tonight. Again, the game was in Ottawa. Winnipeg, you know, people made a big deal. That wasn't bad. You didn't get booed off the ice, but you should have got booed. But, you know, you see it. There's a different mentality there, and it's got a different kind of letdown for the average Maple Leaf fan.
So this is what we talk about. And again, you know, I'd love to say that, you know, and it'd be a lie, that every game of my career I was 100% committed to everything I did. You know, that's a lie. The challenge, and I've said this all year, Gord, is the consistency. A lot of guys come from areas that the game was easy for them in regards to being the best on their team, being the best in the league at some point, and then coming to adversity, which is day in and day out, those compete levels are a lot higher than what you're used to, and you have to find ways to be successful. Some guys do. Some guys have a great career because it's so consistent. But what we saw was a team that didn't want to be committed to going out the right way. So why did we think, now it's easy to analyze, why did we think when the things got tough that they were actually going to fight the fight and grind it? And this is what the key word is, grind. Sometimes you just have to go out and grind, Gord. You know what I mean? Things aren't going your way. You have to grind. Did we see that on enough occasions per an individual and per team at the Toronto Maple Leafs? Did we see enough of that just grind? The bounces aren't going our way. We always heard that. The bounces aren't going our way, or they didn't go our way, or this, that, and the other thing. Did we see them grind and stick to a system, and grind it out and try to win hockey games? Because I told you, a good team has to find different ways to win, and they only have one way.
Well, the thing is, when they lost those four games after the Winter Classic, and then the way they came back, because they got thoroughly defeated in one or two of those games.
Columbus was 6-0 at home.
Yeah, and then they came back, and they became the hottest team in the NHL before the Olympic
17
break.
17 of 22 points. 17 games out of 22 games, they got points.
And that's where I thought, okay, because I always said that, you know, being a having my professor emeritus status and losing streaks, that just about, for a winning team, you've got the peaks and valleys the valleys can't be as long as they've been. And I thought, okay, they've got that nipped in the bud. And then that's why I think when you ask those questions, it's easy to say now because it's been a horrible finish.
Yes.
But before,
2 of 14.
Before they never broke at all. I mean, no. They may have bent And last year they got to the playoffs and they seemed on that path again. So 2 years ago, Brian Burke was the one that expressed exasperation on behalf of everybody. So you kind of accepted.
Yep.
Yeah, you kind of, because he said, I've never seen this happen. Well, now 2 more years in a row, you've seen something happen that isn't normal.
Well, and again, as much as we want to say the way they lost last year in Game 7 is a bad thing, I tend to, and I really was hoping that that game, coming back from a 3-1 deficit, you know, losing that game in Toronto at the ACC, Dion pinching, them winning the game, Boston, everybody thought, oh, they're going to Boston, it's over. They end up winning Game 5, they come home to the ACC, they win Game 6, and Reimer was a big factor in both those games, going to Game 7, and, you know, for 50 minutes, they're the better team. And then, unfortunately, you know, stop the breathing, as Randy Carlyle alludes to, then you stop skating, and then they collapse. This year, they start off with a bang. And we, you know, it's like beating a dead horse, but everybody's like, boy, they're an exciting team. When I'm like, well, are they exciting because what they give or what they give up? And to me, it wasn't exciting enough what they were giving. It was what they were giving up that became a concern for me. And everybody, don't worry. And the players were, again, you know, we know what we're doing. We got to tighten that up. And I kept saying to you, Gord, 20 games in, they think they're having a hard time finding that switch. 30 games in, they don't know what wall the switch is on. 40 games in, and now 60, they're in a dark room and they're fishing all over the place. And it's just the same things that are happening, that a team that does not give those that type of opportunities or give up opportunities to the opposition does not give the right credibility to those opportunities. And if you don't do that, then you're not respecting the game the way it should be played.
The other part about a team, when I say a losing team, let's say a team that doesn't make the playoffs, just phrase it as that, and that's the Toronto Maple Leafs this year, is, you know, a couple of years ago, I did a couple of games for CBC in Montreal when they didn't make the playoffs. And Scott Gomez had been the big pickup, I mean, via trade, but he was the big ticket item there that went from being a guy that scored a decent number of goals and also the New Jersey angle too, right? The New Jersey angle, even though he'd made a stop in between. And you were treating him like a special needs kid. I hate to say it because it was so bad. Mm-hmm. You couldn't even give any kind of objective criticism because it was so bad. You felt sorry for him, and they didn't make the playoffs. And then when they started afresh last year, they bought it, did the provisional buyout, and what? David Clarkson, you said it. Like, yeah. I mean, seriously, it's not, you know, you feel so bad so you don't beat away at it, but you're watching the game tonight, and as you said,
what
I mean,
happened?
Like, did they give us his brother? Like,
no, is there, maybe whatever there was it may a be. Twin. Yeah,
it's not.
We got the bad one.
It's not even. Never mind looking at the stats. And again, tonight's a nothing game. And you see, and you go, the guy just looks lost now.
Yeah,
lost. I don't know when he looked. You know, I've seen him play, and I saw, and maybe so much about that drive to the Stanley Cup final with the Devils. So the guy does have a resume that a lot of teams, at least, got him, but a lot more
coveted,
teams were signed him. But man, oh man.
It was just one of those years, and I mean, I'm sure there's other sports, Gord. Yeah, Seve Ballesteros, you know, losing his golf game, maybe you attribute to his health.
Well, Ricky Romero with the Jays,
well,
were seeing his way.
Just saying, you know, different. You don't see it, and you know, and I believe, and I still believe this. If we can get rid of that $36 million, you know what I mean, kind of contract, which you can, I understand that. But if you could just put that to the side and just say, you know what, I believe he's going to have a better year next year. There's no way he cannot have a better year unless he, you know, unfortunately, knock on wood, he breaks his leg and then he's out. I mean, this year, and it's a terrible stat, but he was suspended more games than he had points, Gordon. And that's the problem, you know, and he struggled, his identity, all this kind of stuff. I'm not making excuses because I still believe he worked hard. I just don't believe he worked smart like many of the Leafs. And it's and he's
starting with
a
the 10
year.
Game suspension.
Yeah,
really.
And that was a hesitation. And thank God they had to hold Naz back, because who knows what could happen then. But my point is this: he's going to be better. Will he ever be able to live up to that contract? Probably not.
But it's like Scott Gomez in Montreal. We're not even talking about the money anymore.
That's his game. What happened to his game?
You know, and then when you're running into trouble late in the season about trying to get guys up.
But his balance was his strength on the puck. And I said this to you earlier. This is not the guy that I watched for years in Jersey. You know, winning those battles, taking the puck hard to the net, not getting knocked down, not knocking himself down. So again, he's a guy that most definitely he will be back. So everybody, you know, they already used their two compliances. And he will be back, and he will be better. I'm not sure he's going to make everybody happy. And I, first and foremost, I just like to see happiness get in his game, because not only him, but many at least. I didn't see that. And, Gordon, I brought that up a couple months ago, even when they were winning.
Yeah.
Didn't look like they were having much fun.
Well, okay, again, so many different ways to go, and we'll move on. And again, it goes back to guys you identify with here, whether it's, you know, Matt Sundin got some knocks, but I think people realized that he did have passion. He was a leader. He went out and it, but Dion Phaneuf does it more his way rather than Wendell, that was an understated leader but did emotion on the ice. Dougie was the little jerk every street had and loved. You loved, and he was annoying and was effective. And
you wanted to beat the crap out of him, and you loved him when he was on your team.
And you know, just I go back to last Saturday's game, that horrible game, and for Dion Phaneuf, who talks like RoboCop normally. And again, I'm not, that's his style. It's very professional. Don't get me wrong, but just to not
be honest,
not say they got outworked. And you kind of thought, wait, am I, like, I mean, seriously, are you trying to put this load of crap, trying to pull this over on the fans and the media and everybody else going? That's when all these other things, and we don't know the machinations, what go in the dressing room, but boy, oh boy,
I think he was didn't want to throw his teammates under the bus, but again, transparency is one thing that I think the Toronto Maple Leaf fans want and deserve. And I think when you go to Dion and he says that, and then you go to a Bolin that's won 2 Stanley Cups out of the last four years, gets the winning goal, and he says we got outworked, who do you think they're going to listen to? And then where does that leave Dion? So, I guess it's not a huge factor, because I'm sure deep down he knew they got a work, but it's, you know, the honesty. And I think, you know, be honest that way, because I don't think they were honest with the fans. They weren't honest with themselves about the lackadaisical effort on the defensive side of the puck. And that came back to bite him in the rear end.
Anyway, talking about the Toronto Maple Leafs, our man covering the Toronto Maple Leafs throughout the season, joining us with Gord Stellick and Rick Natras on Leafs Nation postgame right here on Sportsnet 590 The Fan. David Alter, and David, we're talking about game number 82. We thought game number 83 would be a playoff game like last season, but Monday's going to be a pretty interesting game number 83 with Brendan Shanahan coming in.
Yeah, Brendan Shanahan will come in, and the questions, I'm sure the first couple of them will be what changes he will feel necessary to kind of produce a recipe for success, or at least change what's been going on with this team over the course of the last year and all the goodwill that perhaps was lost from that shortened season when they got to their first playoff appearance since 2004. So there's that. The coaching question will be a big change as well. It's one of those things where you think a change would be soon, but perhaps there might be more candidates out there with teams getting early exits to the postseason. Maybe there's some sort of change there, and I'm sure Shanahan will play it all political, saying that he's got to talk to everybody involved first, taking over a new team before deciding on any sort of personnel changes. But with a limited NHL experience, just working within the league, It's going to be an interesting one, just to see what Brendan Shanahan's imprint will be on the Toronto Maple Leafs, not having a history with the team in his NHL career. It's certainly an interesting dynamic for sure.
Well, again, I think it comes down to a fact is that the cap situation is still going to be a situation, certainly not as dire as this year was when they couldn't make any movement. You know, couldn't bring in those guys, couldn't make the deal for Vanek because they couldn't take any money at all at the trade deadline, David. So, you know, Dave Nonis, in my eyes, has done a pretty good job, other than the fact that bringing Shanahan in is great and it makes a lot of people feel warm and fuzzy. But the product on the ice is still the issue. And how can you change a team drastically in regards to more grit? And they need not only a 6, 7, 8 guys that can play that style, that are up and down, not side to side, and play that style that gives them a better opportunity to be successful.
Yeah, and that's going to be a challenge for sure. The Leafs are committed to a bunch of core guys, and some of the other skilled players will be coming up in terms of their contracts, not this upcoming season, but the off season following that. And with the cap projected to go up by only a certain amount, given Canadian dollar issues and maybe some other things, it will be tough. And yes, because they were under quite the cap constraint. They were constantly on LTI for much of the season, and when that happens, you don't get any sort of relief to take on a contract like Vanek, which probably hurt them in terms of adding some more short-term skill that would have helped some of the other younger guys on the roster. Maybe they do need to get a little bit older, guys who actually know how to play proper defense in terms of positioning, because young guys will only learn based on maybe some of the veteran examples there, and maybe there needs to be a little bit of a change there. I thought bringing in Gleason would have at least helped a little bit, but it certainly didn't translate into the results that I think Randy Carlyle and the rest of Leaf management were kind of looking for. It's going to be an interesting one. David Clarkson is something that they have to address. How do they get the maximum out of him with 6 years left on his deal? And just how badly hurt was he this season? And maybe an offseason that just kind of shut off and reflect and maybe perhaps just restore his body might bring back a better David Clarkson next year. Maybe a different coach that Clarkson can play better to might be a situation that Shanahan recognizes and makes a change in that regard. So there's still a lot of things to address, and perhaps some players that they should add and maybe make a change to their core, because it looks like the core just kind of gave up this year.
You know something, the 24/7 series, and certainly a part of its success was you saw Sidney Crosby's personality in the Pittsburgh Penguins, and you saw the Capitals and Ovechkin and all those, and it was dull, man. I mean, it was dull with the Toronto Maple Leafs, and I'm thinking that as the season went on, and you've got Kessel doesn't play that role. Phaneuf's pretty straight, you know, doesn't have pizzazz that way.
JVR as well.
Yeah, you know, there's not a lot of emotion there. And I think that was something that when you're losing, it's Tiger Williams, Doug Gilman, whatever it may be, Brad Smith, Darcy Tucker, you name it. I don't know. And I got to think, you cover them day by day, but I just, to me, that kind of was lacking this recent losing streak.
Yeah, when you look at the guys that had left the team compared to the guys that they added, it's funny because the guys that have left the team are probably the most outspoken and most big-time character guys, with the exception of Nazem Kadri. Not saying Kadri's full of character, but at least he shows his personality somewhat, and maybe he gets knocked by the rest of his teammates for being a little bit too honest. But you look at the personality that was on this Leaf roster last year, and it was guys who had no shortage of speaking their mind and kind of cracking a joke or two. And we always point to Leo Komarov as an excellent example of that. When times are kind of getting tough, he just kind of not only was a great player on the ice for getting under the opponent's skin, but just cracking a joke in the room that would just kind of get everyone in stitches and kind of loosen things up. And you wonder what kind of value that would have had if they had someone like him perhaps before that losing streak that had occurred. And perhaps we see Komarov back in the NHL maybe with the Leafs next year. Who knows? That's still something that has to be addressed. But you're right. Those kind of guys, Mikhail Grabowski was certainly a personality that they kind of lacked as well, that they didn't really have in terms of that spot this year. Like him or hate him, he's a personality, someone who could kind of crack a joke and say some funny things as well. I think 24/7 was a bit unfair to them, because I really do think that they clammed up just given the fact that they didn't want to make themselves look bad, just given what the Toronto market is for showing that. So who knows? I do think that maybe there needs to be a different room dynamic there, and it can come from the coach as well. It doesn't necessarily have to be the players that step up. If the coach is funny or knows how to kind of crack a joke out of somebody, then that can kind of change things. There's certainly a lot of problems there for sure.
Well, yeah, and David, if you know, one of them certainly is the back end. As much as I'd want to blame the forwards for a lot of things, again, we saw, you know, a prime example of, you know, the inability or the not to have a full understanding on how to play a 2-on-1. We saw a lot of overplaying the puck carrier, giving that pass away. In a lot of those cases, they were open nets and no chance for the goaltenders. But we saw a kid that could, you know, play on this team next year, maybe another year, halfway through. We're not sure. Petter Granberg. And we saw him break up a 4-on-1.
That's right, 4-on-1.
No, and you know what? I don't joke, because technically it was really a 3-on-1. But he was so patient, and he held the middle, and he had a really good stick. And, you know, one of the things that I saw with this kid, and it's only one game, and he was nervous, and I get all that, right? It was a great opportunity for him to come up, get a taste, go back and help the Marlies, and maybe figure out that he needs to do things a little quicker, but he had a good stick. And that's one thing that I think it lacked defensively for five guys, but most importantly for the defensemen in their own end. And we've got a guy, Cody Franson, I'm sure he's hurt. You know, Jake Gardner and Morgan Riley seem like they're, you know, they're healthy because they kept their feet moving and their speed was, you know, till the last minute was great. But you still, Randy Carlyle, still a little bit wanting to play veterans. We saw Jake and Riley play, in my guy, in my eyes, play one, you know, a pretty good game. And we saw that Randy stuck with Phaneuf and Franson on that power play late in the game and didn't give these kids a sniff. And that, to me, is just wrong. You know what I mean? It was just wrong. It's just, again, you earn things. You don't get it because you're the old guy. That's old school. Well, today's school is, you know, you're supposed to earn it. And I didn't think that Randy, you know, gave certain guys opportunities because they earned it or took away opportunities because they didn't earn it. And I'm not just talking about the defense.
Yeah, it's hard to know what's going on through his mind when he's got a couple of games. And we talked about this, or I talked about this before. This is the first time Randy Carlyle has ever had to deal with lame duck games or lame duck days in his coaching tenure. That wasn't the first season he took over, that portion where he already knew that he was just kind of preparing for next season, even when he got in there, just given how damaged the Leafs appeared after Ron Wilson. Then they make the playoffs. They were always preparing for that next game, and even into the postseason, there was that preparation to the next game. This is kind of unfamiliar territory for him now, because they went from looking like a surefire playoff team in that earlier part after that California trip to having 5 days to go in your coaching tenure where you're literally playing for nothing. And I think that was new for him, and a lot of different ideas went through his mind, starting Drew McIntyre, bringing up different guys, trying to change things up, giving the other guys some spots, maybe preserving guys for next year, but at the same time also knowing that there's a cloud over him, thinking that this could be his last game, and surely it's on the back of his mind, just knowing what this kind of marketplace is and perhaps just kind of getting a sign for how things happened this year and how the team kind of refused to respond under him with the changes that he made. So it's kind of funny when you looked at him going into Ottawa, he's just kind of waving the jack around, looked like he was trying to keep things loose. But you got to wonder what's going through his mind. And certainly he's going to be making these kind of decisions personnel wise and changing things back and forth. But no one looked interested in that game, not even the coach. It was a horrible game to try and watch. You hate watching those type of games, and at that point, you hope that you see something that's going to inspire anything. But it was another uninspired performance from the Leafs. I don't think it really mattered who you played in that game to really address anything that was going to be tangible that can carry over. Petter Granberg, I like him, but he could be another career 5-6 guy at best. Who knows what's going to happen there? They have defensive issues that are probably way deeper than him.
Well, we'll get a lot addressed over the next couple of days anyway as far as the direction goes. David, thanks as always, and we'll hear from you quite a bit.
Appreciate it. Thanks a lot, guys. Appreciate everything.
David Alter, of course, joining us, our man covering the Toronto Maple Leafs. We'll come back with more. Ottawa Senators 1-0 winners over the Toronto Maple Leafs tonight. You're listening to Leafs Nation Postgame, brought to you by your GTA Acura dealers with Gord Stellick, Rick Natras on Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
The Fan. On demand.
Welcome back. Leafs Nation postgame brought to you by your GTA Acura dealers. Gord Stellick, Rick Natras on Sportsnet 590 The Fan as we take you home one more segment, the end of the Maple Leaf season. A 1-0 loss to the Ottawa Senators. And Rick, we've chatted every which way you can about Randy Carlyle's situation, his fate. It's a guy that was known to be pretty hard on the players in Anaheim. He was quite hard on them when he took over with about 18 games left in the season 2 years ago. I thought, though, he was pretty good giving guys days off this year. You know, optional day of game skates. It was a guy, I don't know, he tried to change his ways, but whatever, whether he's the Maple Leaf coach or not next year, it's not going to be the same reasons they had in Anaheim where, you know, guys, Stanley Cup ring or not, it's hard to keep guys, you know, liking you, and that's what happened in Anaheim. A little bit different here.
Yeah, it's funny that coaches have to the game's changed so much that coaches have to worry about players liking them. You know, the end result is usually about winning, and at some point, the responsibility's got to fall on the player. And I just think Randy Carlyle and his staff, to me, again, we're, you know, Gord, we only see so much of it, and some of it's glossed over and some of it's, you know, hidden. But, you know, they worked hard. I believe they worked hard. The conversations were, you know, being out there. You know, we've pleaded, we've begged, we've done this, we've done that, and they continue to not heed our, you know, our guiding. And this, that concerns me, and that should concern Shanahan, that should concern Nonis, and that should concern whoever is, you know, the next in line, if there is another guy next in line. I still believe that Randy Carlyle, in my eyes, is a good coach. I just, you know, wondered if he understood that, you know, again, was it depth because of the salary cap that you couldn't put a really good fourth line together, or was he too stubborn with this Colt Norris stuff in regards to putting an energy line together? And that, to me, was the downfall and the inability for certain guys to maintain an 82-game pace because the pace was too hard and too long, meaning minutes played per game for at least your core guys, in my eyes.
Well, let's hear a little bit. We heard earlier, let's hear a little bit from the Toronto Maple Leaf head coach, Randy Carlyle, after tonight's 1-0 loss to the Ottawa Senators.
A little frustrating season, Randy?
Well, you know, it's 1-0 hockey game. You know, there's obviously tonight was kind of a game where didn't seem like it was both teams didn't want it to be a no-hitter for a while, and then you know, they score a power play goal, and our power play frustrated us in the hockey game. We couldn't get anything going on it, and I guess that's probably the way this season has went, from a standpoint of we worked hard in parts of the season to give ourselves a chance, and then we fell far short of our goal, that's for sure.
Granberg looked confident out there.
Yeah, a big guy that you know, I said that he's a puck mover and he's a big man that plays physical, and you know, that's what these games at times they have to be for young players, and that's the, you know, encouraging thing that he came in and was able to handle the situation. And the other thing was James Reimer's play. You know, he stood tall in the nets for us. You know, he likes this building.
Given the way things have unfolded the last month, is there any relief that comes with sort of the end of this and a chance to take a break and refresh?
Well, there's going to be a lot of I guess, thoughts and a lot of meetings taking place here over the next little while, so I don't think it's a break. It won't be a break for coaches. You know, I know that players, it's a different story, but with coaching staffs and management, and we have an inventory that we have to go over and do an analysis of where we went and why we went and how we went, and do some things and that we have to look into what we did too.
Cody Franzen was saying it's going to be tough. This is going to stick with him. Do you feel the same way, where the way this season ended?
Well, it's terribly disappointing and emotional. It's almost like you get in a state of depression because it's such a negative in your life. It's simple as that. We're embarrassed about the way things unraveled for our hockey club.
May I ask you, what feels worse, Game 7 last year or this?
Well, I think this has been extended over a period of time that's really dragged you know, a lot of people and a lot of emotions with it, where the Game 7 was over in a period, and it, you know, it still hurt. They're both equally cutting, but again, you know, I think this has been drawn out over weeks here, and the last three games we just didn't have enough energy and didn't have enough execution to play the game that was required to get, you know, ourselves a win. We've simple as that.
What happened with your big line down the stretch? A little fatigue post Olympics?
I don't know. I think, you know, usually I look at it at the power play. That's the segment when you look at where our power play went over the last month. It's pretty shocking, and you know, that really is, and that goes hand in hand a lot of times with your most skilled guys because they get the opportunity to play on that. So that's what you'd have to look to.
Do you think this finish suggests that a lot needs to change for this team to be better, or?
As I said, it's going to take some time to decipher everything that's gone on, and again, there will be a lot of questions and a lot of internal banter going back and forth on what we feel and what we needed to do and what we should have done and what they could have done and all of those things. It's going to take some time to get through.
Do you look back and think maybe there's something you could have done differently? And
oh, there's always going to be things I could have done differently, for sure. You know, there's nobody here that is absolving themselves of any responsibility.
Well, Toronto Maple Leaf head coach Randy Carlyle, interesting, he put a lot on the power play, which had gone right for most of the year. The penalty killing's been a killer for bulk
forever,
of the number of seasons.
But, since you were, before you turned 50, but and that's a while.
That's been a while ago, yeah.
And before I turned probably almost close to 40, so I mean, you know what I mean, and I'm 52 coming up. Again, special teams are great, but the five-on-five play by a lot of different guys. We looked at power plays, and I was going through some stats, Gordon. We talked about 320 goal scorers, right? You got Mason Raymond, Lupul, and Kadri, and they scored more than 30% of their goals, if not 30%, on the power play. So you're talking guy having a, you know, you look at the stat, a guy looking and saying, oh, 20 goal season, good year. Well, opportunity. We look at Cody Franson, and a lot of his points were power play. So let's eliminate, in my eyes, let's eliminate and see what you did when you were playing 5-on-5, and let's see what the PK did.
So everyone fell behind Alexander Ovechkin.
Yeah. My God, he scored 50, his 51st today, and minus, what was he, 40? Somewhere around there.
Something like that,
but my point is this. That's great, you know, that he feels that the power play is something, certainly could have helped him in a few games, Gord. As we talked about, if they would have won maybe a third, just over a quarter of those past 16 games, 17 games, they're in the playoffs, right? And maybe that power play could have got them in there, but it doesn't hide the fact of the inability or unwillingness to sacrifice yourself to win a hockey game. We saw even tonight, I know it's the last game of the year and it didn't mean anything, but we've got guys taking one-timers. Instead of getting out there and blocking a shot, you got to turn it to the side and taking away the width of your, you know, the width of your body to get in the shooting lane, and you're minimizing your size in that lane, so the puck gets by you. So this last game, 20th game, 15th game, 30th game, you know, 50th game, just pick a game, Gord. And that's the thing. So I don't like to pick on Randy because he's old school and I like his thought, but if he thinks the power play was, you know, one of the biggest concerns, there's a lot of concerns, and he said that, the willingness to do what it takes to win is the problem. And that's the core issue with this hockey team, and the core issue with this team for over 8 years, or seven anyways, when your goals for and your goals against are in the plus minus 30 range minimum, and your PK is at the worst, you know, third to worst in the National Hockey League, how many times do you think you're going to make the playoffs?
And it's interesting, you talked a lot about the unwillingness to go with four lines. When he won the Stanley Cup with the Anaheim Ducks, they had depth and balance and really rolled them. Now, he doesn't have the same talent here like he did the Anaheim Duck team. And you see Cole Knorr out there tonight, and you kind of go, why? You know, I mean, last year, him and Fraser McLaren had a role.
This is where Fraser McLaren, I thought, Gordon, and we talked about that.
Yeah, and then to go down. And anyway, so some puzzling things and some answers that way, of course, will be debated over the next couple of days. Of course, Randy Carlyle talking about being a busy time for coaches, and a lot of people wondering that, or thinking that Randy Carlyle won't be busy shortly. We'll find out what gives in that respect. But James Reimer, as we chatted with Chris Johnson about it, he's always been a stand-up guy, a class guy. Obviously, what's happened the last little while hasn't been a lot of fun for him. A lot of people seem to think this is going to be his last game in a Toronto Maple Leaf uniform. Certainly was one of the very, very few Leafs that showed up and played extremely well tonight. Here he is, Toronto Maple Leaf goaltender James Reimer, after tonight's 1-0 loss.
James, was there any emotions today involved in thinking that this could have been your last game as a Leaf?
there definitely were some thoughts like that. No, I was just trying to come in here and have a good last memorable game, and think about all the memories. It's just been an interesting time.
Professional pride out there tonight, and respect for what you know you could bring to a game.
Yeah, I mean, honestly, I've been feeling really good the last couple of games. Really getting back to the way I know I can play. Kind of starting Boston. It's good to have a night tonight, in a sense, statistically, that, showed where I was back to. But, obviously, it would have been nice to get the win. But, I've been feeling good. And so, in that note, it's, you know, personally, it's good to end on a high note. But, it's obviously, would like to get the win, too.
painful was this last little stretch to be involved with the team? Is it, Cody was saying Boston was tough, but this was really painful as well.
Yeah, I mean, I think this one was just prolonged. I mean, obviously it was kind of stretched over a couple of weeks where we just couldn't seem to get any traction and string together consistent games as a team. And so, I think that's just, I think we're still a young team and we're learning. Nothing teaches you like adversity. You know, nothing's a better, better learning tool than that. And so, than adversity and making mistakes. And so, we've made some here, and I think we've improved a bit here and there. And so, as long as we keep getting better, every year, I think it looks good.
What have you learned about yourself this year, James?
I learned a lot of things. A lot of it is just trying to stay, level-headed through adversity and through, the ups and downs or the major ups and downs of this season. I think I learned that, trying to find that even ground, that's so important, and not getting caught up in how you feel or how you think you're playing or others thinking the way you're playing. And so, I've learned a lot, and that's kind of just the tip of the iceberg, but it's been a good season for learning.
You don't know if you're going to stay, but would you like to stay?
I don't know if I want to get into that. I always dreamed that I would be, a Leaf right from the start, right from when I got drafted, and especially after my first season up here. That's all I wanted to do was be here and be the guy, just thinking that might not be the case now. It brings a lot of emotions, and it's just real unfortunate the way it's turned out.
James Reimer, and you think back, Rick, about guys like Eric Fichaud was a first-round pick, Francois Larrivée. Yeah. You had Justin Poggi. Guys like that. But a lot of guys, and then you brought in veterans like Raycroft and Toskala. And here's a guy that was just a little-known guy that was kind of an afterthought and didn't talk much about him. And he went about it and by default got the number one job and took it and ran with it. Seems very reflective there. I give him full marks. He's going to be a nice memory.
Yeah, and it's unfortunate that we forget that he 924 last year during the season, his other full season that he had. He was in the 920s, he's had a hiccup here and there. This year's a little bit off. But again, he goes into Ottawa, 9-1-1 in the building, in Ottawa, three shutouts and a 2.06 goals against average. And if depends who you talk to, he also had, he stopped 36 to 37 shots tonight. He was very sharp. And, his save percentage versus Ottawa is like hovering around 973, which is huge. Unfortunately, we couldn't see a game like this when, the first three games of that slide after the LA thing. So, again, and I'm not blaming him, because how many breakaways can you give up? How many odd man rushes? How many of this? And then play those odd man rushes not the way that they should be played. So, again, it's unfortunate. There's a guy that worked his way through the system, we're not talking just Toronto. We're talking he was in Timbuktu, had to play there, then got sent somewhere else, and then made his way through the system. So if anybody thinks that he lacks character, then they don't know the true man.
Well, from James Reimer, we head to, it was last week, Dion Phaneuf-Cotta was a little bit off guard a bit by his remarks about the Maple Leafs work ethic. Well, and the fans, too, and they really haven't changed much of it during the course of the week. He's really, you talked earlier, he was in the top five in all kinds of categories among defensemen. He was playing well. He's had a good season last year.
He played 80%
this year, but boy, it was a miserable, tough time for the Maple Leaf captain who, as Rick says, played too much. Here he is, I guess, talking for the last time. He won't get to talk during the playoffs postgame. Here's the Maple Leaf captain after tonight's 1-0 loss.
Into a moment here, as you look back on a game and you look back on a season, do you?
Well, it's disappointing to be not playing next week. That's, as players, that's what you play for, to make the playoffs and to give yourself a chance at winning. And we fell short of that, and it's disappointing.
How tough is it going to be to let this pass, to flush this? Is this going to stick with you for a while?
Yeah, it sticks with you for a while. Definitely, when you take time to look back and reflect, it's something that doesn't go away in a couple of days. It's this is our job. It's a business, and we're in the business of results, and we didn't get results. And we were in a very good spot, and we let it slip away. So that's the extremely disappointing part of everything.
How did the season unfold for you, do you think?
Oh, I feel that I didn't play as well as I could have down the stretch run, and I'm disappointed in that. And overall, it's when you don't make the playoffs as a team, you look at yourself first and you evaluate it. So I'm well aware of I didn't play well enough down the stretch, and that's I'm disappointed in myself for that.
Do you expect as time goes
Pardon
on,
me?
Do you expect as time goes on through this off season that there's going to be some changes around the team?
Well, I don't think any summer there's a team that doesn't make changes, and in this league now there's lots of change summer after summer, and when you do not meet the goals or expectations that you have for your team, which we felt we took strides in the right direction last year of being a playoff team and doing a lot of real good things, and we missed the playoffs this year, there's bound to be changes.
I don't know if we've asked you about Brendan coming in yet. What is your reaction to coming in?
He's a guy that's won. He's got a lot of experience in the league, and then obviously going and working for the NHL, doing that, there's a lot of responsibility there too. So he's going to add a lot of experience to our organization, and as players, it's when there's change, and when you bring in someone like that with the respect that he has in the game, it's a positive for the organization.
Well, it's been tiring to hear the Leafs lose. It's kind of tiring to hear Dion Phaneuf talk, and that's not a slight. He really doesn't have a hell of a lot more he can say. He's just being the captain.
He
toes the party line. He doesn't throw anyone under the bus, but that's...
He threw himself under the bus. He said he didn't play well enough.
Well, I'm glad he said that.
But Gord, that's what I'm saying. Do you think there was a couple other comments, no, maybe not tonight, but me, how'd you think? I'm very happy with my year. If that when you don't make the playoffs, I don't care if you got 100 goals. The first thing that comes out of your mouth is, I'm disappointed that I couldn't do more to help us make the playoffs. I know it's a line, but you got to believe it. But when the first thing that comes out of your mouth is saying, you know what, some of us had a pretty good year, we'll take these next three games. This is before these games are even over. Use it for experience. Do you believe that the only thing they do believe is that they had a good year and it's everybody else's fault?
Yeah.
So he takes responsibility for that, which is great. And he says it out straight that, you know, it's not good enough. So if anybody comes out of this year saying, you know what, I was pretty good, but, you know, everybody else sucked, what do you think that does for the dressing room? Do you think, you know what I mean? And is that a hesitation by any individual when it comes down to, geez, if I get hurt, I'm not going to get my 25 goals? So is it about blocking a shot, taking a hit to make a play, diving and having a 250-pound guy lie on you just so you can get the puck over the blue line to get a change? You choose not to do that because, geez, I had a pretty good year. Well, that's why you're not having a pretty good playoffs.
Well, and for a lot of guys, you wonder the opposite. If they have long-term contracts, they don't do it. I mean, it's just when you're, you know, like I said, the Leaf captain, unlike last week when he talked about the work ethic thing, what else can you kind of summary, putting a bow on it?
Yeah.
And to his credit, he didn't play well down the stretch, like he said, but we're the ones that can gauge, by and large, and the fans and observers and media types. He did have a good three quarters of a year,
and he did
have a good year last year.
I just think too much. I think, again, Gordon, I've talked about certain guys playing the wrong minutes, and Dion, to me, is still, you know, he's a quality NHL defenseman, a high one, you know, but is he a guy that can play 26 minutes and be effective? I say no. I think he's still that 19 to 21 minutes on a consistent basis, 21 being high. But who else can you fill it in? Can you play your number one line 24 minutes, 23 minutes, and expect them to back check and compete in the defensive zone? Because you can't rely on other guys to even get the puck in deep and put some type of cycle on it. And we talk about, you know, everybody, Bodey this, Bodey that. Well, he's the only guy that I really took notice that Randy Carlyle, he was trying to play Randy Carlyle style. And that's the biggest thing. Again, if your top six are a little bit looser, they get a lot more rope, Gordon, because you want their natural ability to come out. But there's still a system that has to be played. So the natural ability from those guys, we saw a lot of it, but we didn't see the team ability come into play. But your bottom six forwards are the guys that help push the opposition's D back on their heels, gets them tired by grinding it out, making contact on the forecheck. And I told you today, many times, there was no physicality. As much as these stats, the number three hitting team in the league, and this guy's the number two guy, block shots and all that, that's crap, okay? There was no consistent physicality by the forwards on a forecheck, and the inability for the defense to move up or want to move up and close a gap and make plays outside the blue line were the two biggest issues for the Toronto Maple Leafs.
Well, we always wrap up not just the season, but wrap up each game with keys to the game. And they were a little bit more tongue-in-cheek before tonight's game because it was a game number 82, a meaningless game for
flush it.
Both teams.
I hate that. Anybody says flush it again to me, I don't know, you know what I mean? Flush it. Maybe if you thought about it and really visualized it, then you might have remembered the last time you got beat up the middle and you were playing outside the dots. Anyways, don't get outworked. And what do you think?
I would say they got outworked,
yes. Yeah, okay, because show Shanahan. Well, I guess no one knew that he was going to be watching. I know he wasn't in Ottawa, but I'm pretty sure he's got a TV or a smartphone. Get it over with quick. It wasn't quick enough, bud. And Reimer was outstanding again. You know, if that's his last game in a Leaf uniform, proud of him. Showed some character. And help whoever your goalie is out. How do you think that worked for them again?
Well, there was a two-on-one about two of them, I think, in the first 40 seconds. Yeah. And it was something.
And breakaways on the power play.
Yeah, and it was something Randy Carlyle was candid about the other night, just Drew McIntyre's first start. And
that's why
there'd be a little bit of a bite or a little bit of intensity that way, and there wasn't. And
threw him under the bus.
For James Reimer's last game, it didn't exist either.
You know what I'm saying? So, you know, flush this and we didn't, you know, we can turn the switch and all that other stuff. I think, you know, I'd hate questioning character. But again, there wasn't enough grit and that character to willing to sacrifice your individual needs for the greater good. And that's the team. And again, I told you, Gord, if you ain't playing for the front, who cares what the name is on the back?
Well, at the back of this show, we're done now.
It
was a 1-0. That's right. A 1-0 win for the Ottawa Senators, which also means a 1-0 loss for the Toronto Maple Leafs against the Ottawa Senators. We'll be around throughout the playoffs from time to time. We'll also have our Leafs Nation pregame show on Saturdays as well, 5 p.m. We wish it was covering the playoffs more, so they'll change the title because the Leafs will be covering the playoffs, but not with the Toronto Maple Leafs in it. But this was game number 82. The Ottawa Senators defeat the Toronto Maple Leafs 1-0. You've been listening to Leafs Nation postgame, brought to you by your GTA Acura dealers. Gord Stelic, Rick Natras with you on Sportsnet 590, The Fan.